What we do at Technorati is we're literally indexing what's going on, what people are posting, and our median time now from when somebody creates something on the web to when it shows up live in our index is now under 60 seconds from when they post.
This is PodTech.net. Welcome to Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of innovative marketing leaders and examining how social media is changing marketing throughout the world. Here's your host, Jennifer Jones.
Hi, this is Jennifer Jones, and today on Marketing Voices, I have Dave Siffre, who's CEO of Technorati. And Technorati is really the recognized authority on what's happening on the web. I mean, it is, for marketers, it is something you've got to know about. It's like a focus group of the web. That's kind of my vernacular. It tracks almost 67 million blogs, and it started in November of 2002. So without any more ado, Dave, thank you so much for joining me on Marketing Voices.
Jennifer, thanks so much for having me.
So let's just jump right in. You know, the growth of blogs is just phenomenal, 100 times bigger now than it was 3 years ago, according to something you had on your blog. So let me ask you this. How does Technorati work?
So what we've done is we've gotten ourselves built into every major user-created content tool that's out there on the Internet. And the idea of it is, you know, I love Google. It's a great site. But Google and Yahoo and Microsoft and these other search engines, they take a really long time to be able to index anything that's new on the Internet. And fundamentally, they don't really understand when something occurred. Right? Because, you know, you ever go to Google and try to find out what happened on, you know, April 15th, 2006, right? It's not something that's really built in. And what I realized was that if you could get yourself built into these different tools, and it doesn't matter if it's movable type or WordPress or Blogger or LiveJournal or MySpace or Flickr or any of these other things, that you could actually start to take advantage of tracking what are people saying in real time, and then be able to, you know, to give them back that information as quickly as possible. So as compared to a traditional search engine, which has to go out and, you know, index the entire web, which could take, you know, 2 weeks to 8 weeks to do, if, for example, in Google's case, what we do at Technorati is we're literally indexing what's going on, what people are posting, and our median time now from when somebody creates something on the web to when it shows up live in our index is now under 60 seconds from when they post.
Jeez. That's fast.
So, you know, what it means is, you know, if you're in the media business or if you're in the brand business and you care about your reputation, you're now living in a world where it's not a 24-hour news cycle anymore, right? That, you know, in fact, things can turn around and move so quickly and so virally, right? In a world where we're tracking now over 1.5 million postings, right? So that's sort of like an article every single day. And just under 1 million, you know, videos and photos and such like that that are being posted every single day. The ability for something to go viral and, you know, the conversation that's going on around your company, your products, your competitors, right, and their products, now can be measured really in real time. And that's fundamentally what Technorati is all about, is pulling all of that information together, being able to give you access to, you know, over 67 million people and what they're doing, saying, and talking about, and how that relates to you and you know, the things that you care about.
So that's essentially sort of a grand sweep at what it measures. So why should marketers be using Technorati?
Well, it really comes down to, number one, are you really interested in what, you know, the people formerly known as your consumers are doing with your products? And, I mean, so far I haven't yet met a marketer who isn't interested about that information and, you know, who want to also be able to get an idea of, you know, what are the unforeseen events, what are the good things, what are the good news that people are saying, right, so I can find these people. But also, in some cases, you know, you could have an event where people are bad-mouthing you or, you know, there's something bad that's going on. And I'll take the example, for example, of Kryptonite Locks. So Kryptonite Locks is a division of Ingersoll Rand. And about, it's been almost 3 years now, there was a flaw that was found. So these locks, for those of you who aren't bicyclists, if you remember, you know, those sort of locks that look like a big D, right, where it's sort of a curve, and then, you know, there's a circular lock mechanism to it that you can use to lock your bicycle up against a pole or what have you. And these were really known as extremely good strong locks. And the only problem was that there was a set of these locks that you could take an old Bic pen. Remember those Bic pens you used to chew on them in school and you'd get them nice and juicy and really soft, right? Well, what you could do is you could take one of those pens that you could get for 10 cents, chew it up, make it nice and soft, and then literally jam it into the lock, into the circular mechanism, and be able to, in effect, pick the lock. And now this got posted actually on some bicycling forums very, very early in the week of when the incident occurred. And what happened was really quickly a whole bunch of blogs started picking up on it and writing about it and saying, you know, oh my God, take a look at this, because people had posted videos of, you know, taking one of these pens and jamming it in and opening the lock. And others were, you know, were writing and saying, wow, I just verified it. You know, hey, wait a minute, you know, this $60 lock that I just purchased, you know, it's basically worthless, and so on and so forth. And, you know, now if you were a marketer at Ingersoll Rand, how would you have felt, right, if you could actually get access to that story before it became a major story, and what you could do in order to be able to react to it?
So what Technorati really does is help you sort of measure that voice and get ahead of that story and ultimately really ensure that you know what's going on.
Well, and also the second half of this is, how do you know that this isn't some hoax? How do you know who to trust, right? In a world where, in effect, anyone can now become a media producer, right, where anyone, and, you know, literally we're seeing about 100,000 new people starting blogs every single day, right? How do you know whether this is someone you should trust? How do you know if this is someone who is reputable, who's been around a while? How do you know what this person says is going to be listened to by others? And so what we've done is we've taken the same basic idea that our friends over at Google had, which was understanding that hyperlinks are actually these votes of attention, and applied them rather than looking at it in terms of PageRank, which is what Google does to make its search algorithm work, is we just looked at how many people are linking to you over time. And that, you know, if you actually have a lot of people who link to you, chances are, you know, you're reasonably authoritative, or at least you're influential in a community. And so we allow marketers to be able to cut through a lot of the cruft by being able to filter. You can still say, you know, hey, I really want to know, what are people saying about George Bush? But if you actually wanted to see the entire stream, it's just enormous, right? There's loads and loads and loads of people, or people who are talking about Tide detergent, for example, right? But what you can do is then you can say, you know what, just show me what the most influential people are saying, doing, and talking about it. So that, because I'm a busy executive, what I really want to do is, I may not want to see everything in this particular case, I really just want to see what the most influential people are doing. And then, you know, maybe I even look and I see, hey, there's this really influential person who's saying something nasty about me. Let me find out who this guy is and who links to him, so that I get an idea of who influences that person. And so it allows you to very quickly, in near real time, be able to get a much deeper understanding, not only of the story that's going on, but also of the context around the person who's telling the story. And, you know, hopefully that would then lead you to a much smarter way to engage with that person or that group, so that, you know, you can effectively understand and deal with the issue. In the case of Ingersoll Rand, they did nothing. Even though they were informed about it, they did nothing. And so 4 days later, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Associated Press all ran big stories about this particular problem, right? Because they weren't able to get out ahead of it. They weren't able to, for example, issue a recall or, you know, deal with the specific issues and potentially turn it from a minor glitch into, you know, an enormous problem, which then actually turned into a lawsuit and, you know, God knows how many tens of millions of dollars of brand equity that went down the drain.
So when I interviewed Guy Kawasaki recently on basically the same question I'm going to ask you, I'm not going to give you his answer, actually. That was a little too bad a lead-in. So let's say you're a CEO of a technology company, a tire company, a consumer packaged goods company, but you don't get social media. And you've got a marketing person that comes to you and says, look, we should be working more in the social media space by listening to our people that are blogging about us and all of that. And the CEO looks at you and says, nah, that's not important. How would you respond?
You know, first of all, I guess I would start asking myself seriously about, am I working in the right place?
Well, I have to tell you, that's what Guy said. He said, you should quit.
I wouldn't go so far as to quit, although you got to love Guy. I think he's fantastic, right? But I would start asking myself some questions around, is this the kind of company that really actually listens to its customers and takes it seriously, or is, services job one, really just a slogan? What I've found in my experience, and I've met lots and lots and lots of CEOs, and I've been very fortunate to have been asked to come and speak and to talk to different people, is that, in the beginning there was uncertainty and a lot of the unknown about all of this stuff, like how big is it really and who are these people and so on. I would say in the United States, that was sort of how everybody acted about 3 years ago. And then about 2 years ago, the real question was, oh my God, these bloggers, are they journalists? Are they not? This huge, sort of bloggers versus journalism debate came out, right? And, is it going to kill the media industry? Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And, after about, another year or so, we got past that, right, to recognize that, no, in fact, that media is a very important place here, and these citizen journalists and bloggers have an important part to play here, too. And now you're really in a much more realistic situation where you're saying, look, we've been through the political issues where people like, Swift Boat Veterans for Truth made a significant difference in the election, or, the people who brought down CBS News and their reporting on George Bush, right? Because you had people who used to be typewriter repairmen who were able to write in and say, listen, this story's all wrong, right? Because those typewriters didn't look like that. That the ability to be able to get access to the people formerly known as your audience, and the fact that whether you like it or not, they're talking about you, right, is something that you should care about as the CEO of a company.
Right.
And, of course, you can look at it opportunistically, and you can do like what you were saying actually earlier, Jennifer, which is to say, hey, blogs, they're like the world's biggest open focus group. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Although I think if you only look at it as the world's biggest focus group, you miss out on the fact that, no matter how many people you have working for you, no matter how smart they are, there's always more of them out there than work for you. And there's always more of them that are smarter than you. And so what happens if you can actually tap into that and listen to what's going on and what they're really saying about you, as opposed to, what you hear them say when you're looking through double-paned glass? It's a very, very different kind of thing. And when you can see the reactions that they're having to you in real time, and you can do this for literally, anything, any product, any company, any name, right, a politician, what have you, that it's really up to you as the CEO. Do you choose to, to take heed of what the hoi polloi is saying about you and your company, or do you choose to disregard it? And, I'm not going to have so much hubris as to say that, you must take heed to everything that, that the people on the outside are saying, because, hey, sometimes you're right and they're wrong. But you know what? In my experience, I found that happens, the opposite happens far more frequently.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to say that. So, okay, I've got two questions, one sort of international and one sort of real specific. So the first question about international, and how is this all being affected internationally? Meaning, are you seeing sort of different cultures blog more? Are you seeing sort of any just cultural questions come up as you look at all the data that you have and all the examples and things that you're tracking?
Yeah, most certainly. So Technorati's been tracking this world of user-generated media, what we call the live web, as opposed to the World Wide Web, since about November of 2002. And what we've been seeing, of course, is just enormous growth. But at the same time, what we're seeing is a shift in not only the demographics of the people who create and who consume, that, you know, more and more it's becoming a mainstream activity, right? So one of the really interesting things I saw just yesterday was, you know, a Pew Internet study, and these guys are very reputable, that basically said that, you know, 24% of people on the internet have tagged, for example, right? And tagging is, in many ways, the simplest way to create content on the net, right? So you're not even blogging, you're just sort of tagging things. And that, you know, 11% of people blog. And when you sort of step back and you go, okay, well, let's look at what does that mean, not just nationally here in the United States, but also internationally, the growth has been tremendous. So, for example, English is no longer the single largest language in the blogosphere. That in fact, what we're seeing, English actually is still the single largest of, if you compare it to any others, but it's by no means a majority. So maybe I should correct myself and state that more clearly, right? So English is no longer the majority language, right? English is now just somewhere around 37% or so of all of the blog postings are in English, and that includes the United States and UK and India and so on. But that we've seen an enormous growth, for example, in the Asian countries. So Japan is a real close number two, followed then by China is number three in Chinese. And then we see, you know, lots of growth in the Romance languages as well, French, Italian, Spanish. And surprisingly, German, however, is very well underrepresented, Very interestingly.
Why do you think that is?
You know, I really don't know. I was actually just in Germany last week, and I was talking to a number of different German publishers. And my personal take is, for whatever reason, it didn't really happen in Germany very much the same way that it happened, say, in France or in Italy, where there were, you know, certain catalysts that occurred either around elections or around certain social networking sites and such. But what I did see in Germany is Germany just appears to be about 2 years behind the rest of Europe in terms of its adoption. All of the adoption curves are actually moving in the same direction. They just seem to have started about 2 years later than the rest of Europe. So it was lots of fun talking to a number of these German publishers, because they were saying, in Germany, you know, we only care about efficiency, and so that's why no one would ever read a blog. And, you know, saying to them, hey, that's great, you know, just you can continue believing that, but I'll tell you, you know, just looking at all of the growth curves, you're really just about 2 years away from seeing a significant disruption and seeing a significant number of the people formerly known as your readers actually being creators as well.
Okay, this is incredibly helpful. Last question, because I'm really conscious of your time here, and I thank you, is how do you ensure that you've got a blogger being tracked by Technorati? I mean, how do they ensure that Technorati's tracking their blog? Because obviously, if they're blogging, they would like to be tracked by you.
Sure, terrific question. So first of all, if you're using any one of the major blogging software that are out there, whether it's WordPress or Movable Type or LiveJournal or MSN Spaces or Blogger or Yahoo 360, what have you, chances are, as long as your blog is public, you're being tracked by Technorati, right? We're already indexing you. And of course, I mean, one of the things that we tried to be very, very careful about is, you know, if people don't want to be indexed, right, if they want it to be private or password protected, we absolutely do not index those blogs, right? We only do it if people want to make their information available on the internet publicly. And what I would do is just go to Technorati, and if you want to actually know what we know about you, just type in your URL. So in other words, you know, my blog, for example, is www.sifri.com/alerts. And so I would go to Technorati and I would type in that URL and then click on the little drop-down that says, find me in the blog directory. And what we'll do is that, and then you hit return, and what will happen is we'll immediately tell you everything that we know about that blog. We'll let you know how authoritative you are in the sense of how many other people are linking to you. We can tell you, you know, when was the last time that we had indexed your blog, you know, what are the posts that you have. And so therefore, you know, if there's for any reason an issue, you can even, there are some tools that allow you to very, very quickly request that Technorati come and re-index your blog as well. So, you know, we've worked very, very hard to be able to have a good relationship with all of the content creators out there. And, you know, because in the end, what we're really all about is helping to drive traffic back to you, you know, and especially help people find the really good stuff that you're creating, and then, you know, be able to help you participate in that conversation. And if we aren't indexing you well, well then, you know, we aren't being of service. So just go on over to technorati.com, put in your blog URL, and then click on the little pull down to go to the blog directory, and you can see everything that we know about you.
Very cool. Dave Siffrey, thank you so much. This has been very helpful, and I am sure I'll get a lot of response on this because I know people are really interested in what Technorati's doing and how they're doing it and all of that. So thank you very much for being on Marketing Voices.
Jennifer, it's been entirely my pleasure, and we're having, you know, just loads and loads of fun. And please keep on doing the great podcast.
Well, thank you very much. So for all my listeners out there, until next week, may all the voices you hear be marketing voices.